Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 40. Our guest is Mario Prosperino, co-founder of ESPAT. ESPAT stands for Esports Pixels and Technology. Mario and his team have been developing a tool set to provide companies a simplistic and convenient way to collect content. In this podcast, we discuss Mario's career leading up to founding ESPAT, what are some of the challenges ESPAT is facing in their development, and what problems ESPAT aims to solve in the future. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey y'all, it's Trent Knox with the Esports Business Network podcast. Today I'm joined by Mario Prosperino. Welcome to the show, Mario.
Hey Trent, thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm looking forward to this. We got to connect over Clubhouse and had a little bit of a chat on LinkedIn, and I know what you're doing is incredibly important to the industry, especially in the growth of esports. But before we dive into ESPAT and everything, let's talk about how did you get into the gaming and esports space?
Yeah, so traditionally I come from traditional sports. So that spans 12 years at Getty Images, 98 to 2010. Then spent another 8 years at the Associated Press / AP Photo. So, you know, I've been following the space since about 2017. The idea of ESPAT, which stands for Esports Pixels and Technology, was the brainchild of Ed Brooks. So Ed basically reached out to me late 2017 and says, "Hey, are you following this space?" I said, "Yeah, I'm following it because, you know, it's sports business, it's entertainment." And he basically said, "I want to start a multimedia company, and you're the resident licensing guy who's been doing this for 2 decades, and let's have a cup of coffee." And that's pretty much how we got started. We met at a Joe and the Juice Cafe. Actually, I have the same screen grab from LinkedIn about a week ago, April 12th of 2018 is where we first kind of sat down and literally sketched the blueprint of ESPAT on a napkin in that cafe.
Brief technical issue there with the audio recording was not showing up for me, so I'm jumping back in. I brought up broadcasting rights in regard to where this podcast may be leading to, but I also wanted to ask before we dive into that is you were working in the Getty Images and Associated Press. Were you on a journalist side, or were you providing technology for journalists to be able to create content?
Actually, neither. It basically was the idea of still images being created at venues across different sports and entertainment opportunities. And, you know, the idea of cataloging those images. You know, I got started at Getty in the late 90s, 1998, where it was right before the dot-com boom. And, you know, we basically saw the value of cataloging the content in digital format and supplying those images on a per license use to anybody who was writing a blog, a website. You know, back then magazines were still prevalent, broadcasts, you name it. So it was the idea of digital asset management. The sports leagues in the late 90s understood that it was kind of a loss leader to try to manage images and content themselves. So they would partner with Getty Images, and Getty would be the exclusive, you know, commercial partner of the NBA in all four major sports. I actually got started in, as a brand manager for the NASCAR arm of Getty Images. And then I ran the NFL division from 2004 to 2009. So that basically was, you know, again, managing the assets, making sure the photography was all buttoned up for the league, the clubs, the unions and what have you. And that's where I actually met Ed Brooks. Like I mentioned, Ed was in the studio at the NFL. And little, you know, unbeknownst to me, like, you know, 15 years later, we would start a multimedia company in esports and gaming.
That's super cool. So you bring
experience from a very adjacent industry, and in this sense of technology and in creative content, with what you're delivering now for the esports industry, are you handling photo, video, audio, the whole nine yards when it comes to multimedia production in this space?
Yeah, great question, Trent. So yeah, we're version one right now on eSpat.ai. So we are supporting the images that are being shot by our cameras. So we go out and, you know, commission, you know, the best freelancers around the world. And they're covering everything from, you know, League to CSGO to Dota, Overwatch, you name it, FGC. And we own the copyright. We deposit the assets into our catalog. And then from there, we're licensing those images back to traditional media that is supporting a story, whether it's, you know, a story about TwitchCon or a story about Worlds. Version two of our website will be supporting video, things like, you know, just B-roll video highlights, audio as well. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that we intend to be a one-stop shop. So if you are, you know, an ad agency on Madison Avenue, in theory, in one shopping cart, you can license, you know, a still image, you can license a video clip, highlights from, you know, Call of Duty Championship, for example. And then also, by the way, if you need, you know, any sort of audio track, music track that is cleared that you want to use in a campaign. So, yeah, in down the road, we will be pretty much all three facets of media assets. For now, we are kind of solving the problem of, you know, images right now in our industry. It's all fragmented. So who's on Flickr? Who's on SmugMug? You know, if I'm writing a story across multiple sports titles, esports titles, you know, I don't want to bounce around from five different platforms. So we are kind of, you know, repurposing the tried and true model of Getty, of a Shutterstock across, you know, creative photography for them. But esports and gaming, we truly thought and believe that it deserves a dedicated platform. You know, somebody that's going to be in the bloodstream 365. You know, we only utilize and we only get embedded with niche photographers and videographers. So though we started in 2018, we kind of had a good 5-year head start because, you know, the freelancers that we had been working with were already shooting esports, you know, since 2010 or since 2011. So by the time, you know, we got these guys and gals into the arena, you know, they know the PR managers, they know the TO operators. So, you know, we kind of had a little bit of a head start by attaching our brand with a community that was already embedded in the sports scene, in esports scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because this is sort of a space that I dabble in as well. I'm, you know, a freelance videographer during my full-time gig, and I'm able to work in this niche of esports, and what your company is doing is providing creatives like myself an opportunity to distribute that content we're making to some mainstream or alternative press outlets,
yeah,
or even advertisers.
You know, it's what's the holy grail, right? Is the credential, right? Everybody wants to go to T1. Everybody wants to go to World, right? I'll venture to say that, you know, you just can't be, you know, a freelancer in the sense of like, hey, this is my passion. Can you give me a credential? Most publishers and TOs will ask you one question, you know, who are you working for? You know, who are you affiliated with? If they had a credential, every single Dick, Tom, and Harry, you know, that's a lot of, you know, passes they have to hand out. So us being a wire service that supports these events with exposure and extension of the photography to editorial outlets, you know, like I said, we go out and secure the credentials. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're that photographer or videographer. You have an opportunity to cover an event that you've always wanted to cover under an eSpat credential. So, you know, we're providing opportunities. We're very cognizant of royalty transparency as well. We have some really good ideas to grow with the community down the road as well. Quite frankly, we know we can build a platform together with the creative. So, you know, this platform didn't exist. We're building it kind of like hand in hand with the creatives. But what makes us really, really happy is that when we see the passion and just the exuberance of a creative when they find out they're shooting at a marquee tier one event, and that makes us feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, I didn't exactly have a full robust understanding of what you guys are developing. And in this, you know, interview podcast, I'm able to learn a little bit more about it. And I find elements of things that have been, you know, I've been a magnet toward in my career and the way that I've been developing things and working in different cultures, from music to film to fashion to now esports being like where I've found my most passion in and pursuing. I've had people contact me with services similar to yours, but didn't have the message or the drive or the motive to go towards this esports specific thing. A lot of big organizations that are in the software space that want to give you sort of a tool to necessarily like kind of organize the content that you're shooting for like larger agencies. But if I'm a freelancer and I'm not working, you know, building my own large media agency, I would like to, you know, be pursuing a path where my photos get seen, my videos get seen, and I'm not just shooting it into a large database of photos that maybe never get used.
Yeah, I mean, we have all our tear sheets going back to 2018 where, you know, imagery shot by freelancers, you know, for the first time, they're getting picked up by major outlets like, you know, back then ESPN and Forbes and Bleach Report, Newsweek. So all of a sudden, like, you know, it's pretty cool to see, you know, what you've been capturing, you know, being seen by 2-3 million eyeballs.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you say espat.ai, if I understand this right, is there an imaging sense where it can start to recognize players, it can recognize, you know, what venues it's at, facilities, and provide like on the client side the ability to search via like keywords to find specific players, specific matches, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, great question. So right now it's basically the immediate infrastructure of, you know, captions. You know, we want to provide the education value back to the industry. There's a lot of non-endemics that do write stories. And let's face it, you know, everybody has a gamer name. You know, you want to educate the industry as far as venue name, what is happening in the photograph, who's competing. But the AI is something that we are building as we speak. So we do want to add, you know, the contextual overlay. We want to provide any sort of machine learning. You know, we think there's opportunities to grow the sport beyond just a static, you know, license use of an image. So the technology part, and that's what the T in ESPAT stands for, the technology part is something that we're really looking forward to in building out for the ecosystem. So, you know, the ways that digital media is being consumed today is much different than it was the last 10, 15 years. For one thing, social media was not around when I first got started in the industry. But technology is what's going to really provide a lot of context around the content. Again, there's so much information in those images that kind of will really help educate the mainstream viewer of esports and gaming to understand, you know, who this player is and give that extra layer, right? Let me take this this next level here to the, you know, their Twitter or their social bios. You know, what sort of headset are they wearing? Is it Turtle Beach? Is it HyperX? There's a lot of contextual overlay that's going to be embedded into the assets.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's like a lot of different applications for the software that you're developing. And is it cloud-based? Am I correct? In it being cloud-based?
Well, yeah, we're still working on it right now. So we'll have more information as we get further along.
Gotcha. And so application-wise, I see, you know, of course, the press outlets being able to source without having to send their own journalists to the event. They can, you know, broadcast stories that other smaller outlets might have already published and license that, those photos and the audio and video. But I also, you know, let's talk about what is it for brands, like you mentioned Turtle Beach, endemic brands. If they wanted to, you know, search your platform for, do you envision them being able to search your platform so they can see where product placement occurred during an event for them to use in advertising, and get obtaining that licensing via your platform?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the brand side, you know, obviously there's a lot of clearances that need to be secured. So, you know, it's easy when you get a phone call or an inquiry from Scuff or Turtle Beach or HyperX. So those brands and their agencies, we will service them. So there's the reactive kind of avenue where they see a set of images online that we own that, hey, listen, this is a great picture. You know, we want to use it for packaging or use it for some sort of digital ad. And they'll go in and basically within seconds, they can purchase a commercial license to repurpose that image for their use. We also have a custom content division. We came out of the gates in 2018, ironically, the same time as MasterCard when they announced their Riot Games League of Legends partnership. And we jumped right into, you know, the pond together with MasterCard. And, you know, last year obviously was an off year during the pandemic, but in 18 and 19, we were creating their digital assets, their video assets, imagery assets at Worlds, at MSI, at All-Star as well. So that's an example of a, you know, a brand and their agencies utilizing our custom content arm to create assets for them. And then what we do is on the photo side, we catalog those images and make them available to editorial outlets as well. And then when somebody's writing a story about MasterCard, they have those images available to them. And then from there, you know, we're able to provide this kind of advertorial exposure to the brand. So if you hire a freelancer, you may get really good work from him or her, from the production. But if you don't have that platform to create that additional exposure, that's a pretty good value add that we provide for brands and agencies.
I see. So so eSPAT is, well, previously to the pandemic and going into the future, has a content arm that sponsors and advertisers at offline events can contact you to build out a production book or like a portfolio around that event, and then your in-house production team facilitates the creation of that content.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a pretty seamless process, you know, on the custom content side.
What was the process of, I mean, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but finding the people who know the industry and know what to look for. What is that process on the content creation side? The camera operators, the photographers, the journalists. What is that process? How do you find them?
Yeah, that's a great question, Trent. So that was probably our easiest task, you know, through the power of Instagram and Twitter. And Twitter is a big platform for creatives. You know, I remember literally just sitting back. This was May of 2018, and just scraping Twitter and just typing in or hashtagging esports or hashtagging photographer, videographer, editor. And I just remember like a bevy of contacts available, specifically in Europe and in North America. Southeast Asia, it's a little challenging. You know, there's a language barrier, there's a culture barrier, there's a time difference barrier. You know, Latin America, probably the same, but Europe and North America, it was just, you know, a who's who, creme de la creme of creatives that I've gotten to build some really good rapport with over the last couple of years. So it was basically introducing ourselves to the creative community and getting an understanding as far as, you know, what titles they like to cover, and understanding the DNA of a freelancer, how they love to kind of be free and bounce around. In one moment they're working for TO, and then the next moment they're working for eSPAT. So quite frankly, securing and the just contacting this community was kind of the least of our troubles, just because there's so much talent out there. And I will say this, I don't think, you know, the idea of you covering or anybody covering esports with sports photographers, somebody who just came back from a tennis event or came back from a soccer match or came back from a football game, I don't think it's just the way that the photographs should be shown. You know, there's something could be said about somebody walking in who loves the title, plays the title, understands, you know, what moments happen at what moment, and just really know the score. Just like, you know, an esports photographer going to, you know, the British Open for the very first time, or going to cover the Kentucky Derby. You know, if you don't know the ins and outs, if you don't know where you should be standing, it's going to pose some challenges. So, you know, once that photographer enters the arena, that's the least of our concerns. You know, our mantra is just, you know, go out and do your thing. And it's been a really a tremendous joy to sit back every weekend pre-COVID and just see the amount of content and the quality that comes from our platform.
What's interesting about this is since we're gone through COVID, and I know we're starting to emerge with offline events they're starting to grow up. They're hopefully we'll have in-person attendance for the larger events, like you mentioned, Fortnite World Cup, Worlds, Rocket League, all of these events. Hopefully from the publisher side, there will be events very soon. On the other end, for the virtual side, is eSPAT providing any content as far as like for advertisers and articles for on the virtual side, at least working with tournament organizers to catalog that content for distribution to other agencies?
Yeah, so 2020, you know, we had, you know, 160 plus events on our agenda, on our calendar, and that's everything from festivals to college esports to, you know, like I mentioned, your tier one and tier two events. We quickly had a pivot in conjunction with working on our platform and getting version one up and going. We then got into partnership mode, and we just saw the value of having conversations with orgs and with TOs and publishers. Everybody owns content, whether it's in still images or video. It's IP. And, you know, the reason why eSPAT is here is because of infrastructure, of IP. There's IP everywhere you look in our industry. There's IP. We hear, you know, with regards to NFTs and, you know, IP infringement. You know, so there's in-game IP, there's IP with skins. And in our world, and what we've been doing for the last couple of decades collectively, our co-founders and myself, is protecting intellectual property and making sure that if you own something, that it needs to be licensed in compliance with licensing laws. So, you know, we want to be kind of the quote unquote, you know, photo police and making sure that when we start doing third-party partnerships that, you know, hey, number one, we're going to protect your IP and we're going to be the gatekeeper. And number two, we are also going to provide a passive revenue stream where for the first time you can monetize your assets in real time and also your legacy content through our platform. So, you know, we went into full partnership mode. Our first deal was with the Madrid Lions out of Spain, and they made some news last weekend at LEC, League of Legends. But the beauty of working with orgs is that, you know, some orgs will give you 8, 9, 10 titles. Maybe some will give you 2 or 3. But, you know, if I do a deal with the Dallas Cowboys, I get one football team. You know, if I do a deal with the Madrid Lions, I'm getting Counter-Strike and League of Legends. And then we moved out to the Far East and we started having conversations out there. And we brought on Talon Esports. They have a couple of titles as well. They're very prominent, obviously, in Southeast Asia. Did a deal with Team Queso, very prominent in mobile gaming. And then here in the States, Misfits Gaming give us Call of Duty, Overwatch, and also LEC. And our most recent partnership is with Version 1 and the Minnesota Rocker, and that's Rocket League, Valorant, and obviously Call of Duty. So we started kind of, you know, the narrative was, hey, you know, you have assets, you're creating content, you know, it's one extra step. Deliver those assets to us. We'll host it, and then you know, we'll monetize it for you. So, you know, although there were no events in 2020, the players in some cases were competing together in the gaming house, or you know, in their apartments or townhomes. And there's always content to be produced outside the venue. So, you know, it could be portraits, it could be just very candid moments. So, although we get our rush from, you know, seeing events happen in venue, there's also content that could be captured and also, you know, syndicated through our platform in a remote location. And that's on the team side.
That's really interesting. I don't think a lot of a lot of people will be surprised by the, what you just said there. I think, you know, also really difficult for someone who's not in the in the content creation business to break down, to understand what you've built, and it's incredible what you've built, you and your team, to be able to make those partnerships and contact those people to get those contracts to provide them that service. Something that came up, and I don't know if this is challenging, it sounds challenging to me, is for, I know larger organizations are able to kind of have a better comprehension of this, but for content creators, specifically streamers or gaming content creators that are kind of incorporated into these orgs and into the events, the tournament or tournaments that are hosted, are they able to work with your company to, you know, document their offline engagements directly? Because I don't know, this sounds like something that's super complicated, because a lot of streamers are super passive in their content creation, in the sense of, like, if a sponsor contacts them, then you might be attached to the sponsor, and then the sponsor then receives all the assets, and then the content creator may or may not have access to that. But if I'm an affiliate and I'm not a sponsor, a partner streamer, well, let's say Twitch, and I'm, you know, a business-minded individual, which this sort of, I'm in this category, and I want to, you know, have a production team follow me around at an event, document my content, and then use that information to then pursue those sponsors, those people that I've been working with, to have them license the content that I created with you as a partner. Is that something that you do?
The folks that we talk to are the IP holders. So that's the very first question that we need to decipher, because, you know, talking to somebody who's in the image or in the video piece is not good enough. We need to talk to the people who actually own it. You know, so, mm-hmm. You know, believe it or not, you know, most people get it, but, like, let's say in traditional sports, the NFL, just mm-hmm. because you watch a game, you know, Dallas Cowboys versus the New York Giants, you know, the NFL owns that copyright, not even NBC or Fox or CBS, who actually covered it. You know, so once they shoot it, they pay rights fees to actually have the opportunity to cover that sport, but they don't own it. So first and foremost is we need to find out who owns the IP of that digital media. And then once we have that answer, right, you know, it could be the content creator, it could be UTA, it could be their agency, it could be Twitch, it could be whomever, a publisher. But we do have aspirations to work directly with influencers as well. So kind of think about, you know, when you kind of look at somebody's Instagram page, you know, 1 million+ followers, mm-hmm. think about, like, the UGC, right? The user generated content that's being produced. You know, if the value add is like, hey, listen, you know, we could, I don't know, generate royalties and revenue to support a charity, to support your cause. They may not actually want to, you know, actually receive the royalties. Who knows? But look at, you know, Dr. Lupo does, you know, some really great things with St. Jude. You know, imagine mm-hmm. if all the content was coming through our platform, and every time you license that content, you know, the proceeds go to the cause, St. Jude. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that is pretty powerful to work with some of the biggest names, the content creators that we're all kind of aware of. So, yeah, we're open to any kind of UGC discussion with mm-hmm. somebody. So, yeah, you have, you know, your kind of your main tiers, you have your publisher, you have your orgs, you have your TOs, you have your leagues. But think about, you know, just think about somebody's Instagram page, their Twitter page, where they're producing, you know, still photos that, you know, it's interesting. I remember I saw a picture for any college football fan, Trevor Lawrence, who is a Clemson quarterback, who's, you know, will be the first pick overall with the Jacksonville Jaguars by all account. You know, he takes a picture of him getting on one knee to propose to his girlfriend, mm-hmm. and it's on his Instagram page, probably taken by either a professional photographer or maybe his buddy. That's the only picture that exists. Like that, you know, he didn't invite like, you know, press outlets to cover that. So if you really want to run that picture, you know, I don't know if they got his permission or not, but I remember seeing it in multiple outlets. It's, you know, it's a big news when the best college football player gets engaged. But that's kind of a, you know, a silly analogy, a silly example of like, you know, UGC happens every day. It gets used, but we rarely talk about it, you know? So you know, we do plan to have a piece of our real estate on our platform carved out for UGC. You know, think about like, you know, the stories that can be told, you know, with their iPhones, and these phones are taking better and better pictures every year of somebody's travels and the behind the scenes and just really kind of the humanizing moments of what a player, a team, or a content creator goes through in their daily lives.
Wow, that's incredibly insightful. You're expanding my breadth of understanding of the way that this business is operated when it comes to the content that gets created. Interesting example, because I kind of understand sports. I know who Trevor Lawrence is. I know Clemson. I know he's going to go number one. With somebody who's, because this industry is kind of the wild, wild west in a sense, with a content creator that creates a piece of viral content online, and it is on multiple different platforms, how does your company figure out who owns the license? Because maybe they were at an event, the photo was taken by a sponsor's production team, and it was posted to Instagram. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot of hands in the pie there of who owns that image, who owns the code behind the Instagram, who owns the likeness of the influencer. Because they were at the event, did they sign a release, right? So what's the step-by-step process of finding that information? Do you have to contact everybody involved, or is there like usually a top level contact to understand who's owning the image?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of licensing in editorial, right? So that's anytime a image or any sort of piece of digital media is used for informative purposes, by law, you do not need releases, right? So if I took a picture of Trent Knox hanging out at E3, I mean, I could write a negative story about you and use that picture or license that picture from, you know, a stock house, whether it's you or whether it's an age shot or Dr. Disrespect, editorial, no restrictions. You know, we go to bed at night and somebody will license our pictures, and there's no clearances or releases that need to be secured. The only time the releases need to be secured is when somebody is either monetizing or merchandising around your likeness. So that same image of Trent Knox hanging around at E3, let's just say you were drinking, you know, a Red Bull. Just because you're drinking a Red Bull, I can't use that as Red Bull and say Red Bull is the best and, you know, we're part of the community. So that obviously needs clearances. But quite frankly, to kind of get to the core, you know, most of the time, listen, if you go on, you know, Team Liquid socials, you know, I'll venture to say that Team Liquid owns the copyright. If a picture is taken by an outlet like an eSpat, you know, it's owned by eSpat. If it's taken by, you know, Monster Energy, I'll venture to say that Monster Energy owns the copyright. So more times than not, a photographer, you know, will not walk away with copyright if they've been commissioned by a brand. In our case, the same thing as well. In order for us to really build a market and do it the right way, we own the copyright once we go to with our credential. If we don't own the copyright, the photographs are owned by a third party. So when you go to our website, if you see the photo credits say, you know, Mad Lions via eSpat, Mad Lions being prefaced, it tells you the editor that the Madrid Lions own the copyright, and via is being distributed by eSpat. If you see the name like, you know, Joe Smith / eSpat, Joe Smith being the photographer, that shows you that we own the copyright as eSpat. So, you know, we're having some really good discussions within the industry. We brought on a very successful executive by the name of Matt Hill last month as our CEO. So Matt comes from the world of the National Football League, Major League Soccer, then spent the last 6 years as the SVP of the GMR New York office, where he kind of got his first, kind of dive into esports and gaming. And he's just really a sharp individual. And, you know, what we're doing right now is educating the industry that the market does not exist, right? So we're actually creating the market. And we've all been, you know, on plenty of phone calls, and, you know, you had Nick DeRozio on a few months ago, and Nick, really a sharp guy as well, understands the idea that, you know, we have to, quite frankly, to be very blunt, we have to start charging for this kind of stuff, right? I mean, you know, when I was a kid, you could watch a heavyweight bout on ABC for free. And then when Mike Tyson came around, even before Mike Tyson, like, you had to pay for that fight. Now, in all seriousness, like, you know, esports and gaming, they're doing it the right way. You have to build an audience, right? So the idea of giving out content for free, totally for it, you know, at the initial stages. But I do think that, you know, it comes a point where I think as an industry that we kind of have to show what we're about by you know, providing a value on everything from not just content, but also, you know, tournaments and, you know, how it's actually, you know, consumed. So, you know, what we're doing is we're actually creating the market. So when an IP holder says, well, you know, what am I looking at as far as royalties? And, you know, give me the kind of like an idea as far as what the upside here is. And quite frankly, there's no history of anybody licensing content. You know, we all know the numbers, and, you know, $1 billion has been floated around as far as what the industry has been doing or will be doing by 2022 or 2023. But we have to remember, like, every time traditional sports comes up, there have been some very modest times within traditional sports. And, you know, as big as the NBA is, you know, 1982 was not that far long ago. And in 1982, their NBA finals was on tape delay, you know, which is unheard of, you know, if you think about it today. So, you know, the National Football League has, what, 55 Super Bowls under their belt. But quite frankly, the first 25 Super Bowls was not this big, you know, kind of American holiday event with, you know, halftime shows and commercials selling for $5 million for 30 seconds and people, you know, congregating in their living rooms and having parties. And so it took the NFL like 25 years to make the Super Bowl the Super Bowl. So, you know, patience needs to be had in our industry. We like to think that collectively between, you know, Ed Brooks, Dante Simpson, Matt Hill, myself, that, you know, 80 years of traditional experience collectively within sports entertainment. So we kind of have an idea of the blueprint. We just want to provide, again, that infrastructure, that experience, that tried and true model within digital IP and licensing.
Wow, that's incredible too. When you talk about sports and traditional sports taking time to really get their feet, stand up and on their own two feet, this is what's interesting about that is that this weekend is an adjacent, a very gaming esports adjacent event with Ben Askren versus or Jake Paul versus Ben Askren, and I feel that it also kind of gives value to what esports pay-per-view will look like in the future. Now, esports pay-per-view has been tested before with StarCraft and different League of Legends things. But are you looking at esports as solely the competitive aspect? Or are you looking at esports at the cultural level also with, you know, let's use Nadeshot as an example, as a cultural representation of what esports is. So, you know, how FaZe Clan and 100 Thieves and Team Liquid and TSM Build are building more of a lifestyle brand. Are you going to be looking at the results from this Jake Paul Ben Askren fight is a as incorporated into the esports like ecosystem, given its social media, gaming adjacent, like a future telling of what esports overall value is.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of being a content hub is that it's always a moving target. So we just don't know what the next storyline will be, you know, and that's our job is to kind of just follow the news. And that's, you know, it's funny, we don't take L's. I mean, like when I say we don't take L's, you know, where we just follow what's trending, you know, like we're at the end of the year, nobody says, oh man, you know, eSPAT, like, you know, they kind of, you know, had a subpar year. No, if it's Fortnite World Cup, we're there. You know, if it's T1, we're there. If it's, you know, E3, we're there. If it's, you know, something happening, you know, I don't know, some charity event, you know, among some content creators, we'll be there covering it. So, you know, we're following all the trends, all the kind of, you know, kind of think of it as entertainment, right? I mean, you know, listen, I mean, whether you believe the Kardashians are popular for certain reasons is your prerogative. But if you're an entertainment, you know, wire service, you need to follow the Kardashians. And back then it was Paris Hilton. So, you know, I kind of, you know, view esports and gaming akin to entertainment. It's these are personalities that people want to write about, that want to kind of follow what they're doing. So we want to be there with our cameras, you know, our video cameras, our still cameras, and create content and make sure that it's made available in real time.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I start thinking about that, I know I used very North American examples of how esports kind of bleeds out into other culture, other entertainment cultures. But you mentioned that you're working overseas. How do you stay in the know for our international audience with, you mentioned so many different markets, the APAC market, you mentioned it, your European market and the NA market. How do you stay in the know?
Go to bed late, wake up early. Listen, it's you know, we have our 10 p.m. Eastern kind of like Google Meets and Zooms, and that's for the folks in Singapore and in Hong Kong and in India as well. And then you know, if it's somebody in Berlin, Germany, you know, maybe it's a call that's a little bit earlier. So yeah, this is an industry where, listen, we love what we do. I just love the story we're telling. I love our journey. To me, it's you know, if you like what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. But yeah, to answer your question, down the road as we post funding, as we scale, you know, we do plan on having kind of a footprint in different, you know, continents. So, you know, imagine maybe there's a BD person, you know, who's based in UK and a BD person who's based in Singapore, and they'll handle those regions themselves. Everything from, again, just being a better cultural fit for us. But for now, like we've made some really good inroads in Europe and in Southeast Asia as well. We're very bullish on mobile, which would, you know, kind of mean talking to the folks in Latin America and India as well, but also anywhere in the world as far as mobile is concerned. But yeah, it's, I think the power of, geez, LinkedIn, to me, LinkedIn is changing lives. I think LinkedIn is, you know, when you first heard about LinkedIn, it was like, oh shit, I lost my job. Let me go post my, you know, my profile on LinkedIn. It kind of came out of the gates as kind of like your dad's social media platform. And then, you know, it's amazing how it's used in our industry on a daily basis. To me, it's my newspaper. So when you came home back in the 80s, you know, your dad, you know, was on his lazy boy and he was reading the paper. You know, on Sunday morning, you read the New York Times. Sunday morning for me is LinkedIn. You know, it's for me, LinkedIn is 7 days a week. But the amount of information that is out there, people changing roles, people building a new product, people raising capital, people that are, you know, obviously making announcements across the board. LinkedIn, Twitter, you know, Instagram, it's kind of hot and cold on Instagram, but Twitter and LinkedIn, you know, quite frankly, as you prospect, and this is advice for, you know, anybody in the industry or any industry, you know, do your homework first. You know, there's so much free information, depending upon if you want information on the person you're speaking to or on the brand they represent. Or in my case, the first thing I do is I scrape, you know, Instagram and Twitter and see what sort of content they're actually publishing on their platforms. So if I'm evaluating an opportunity to represent an organization's, you know, content library, I want to see the last couple of years, you know, what sort of degree of quality are they shooting? What sort of titles they're on the road and they're covering. And if that's an opportunity for us to represent that IP. So it's, you know, well before the phone call, I'm doing a good 30, 45 minutes of prep work and just understanding who these people are and what they're doing. But also more importantly, you know, that executive that you're having that call with, you know, just dive into their LinkedIn and they'll tell you, you know, before they worked at XYZ, they used to be at ABC. And, you know, you'll know, you know, maybe they've crossed paths with somebody, a mutual contact of yours. So yeah, LinkedIn has been great. Twitter has been great. I will say that not everybody's on Twitter. I mean, on an executive side, but everybody's on LinkedIn. And, you know, it's a nice way on a warm side to just get into their messages first and kind of preempt what you want to talk about. But to answer your question, yeah, down the road, we will have, you know, boots on the ground in various countries and continents.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as we wrap up here, I want to give you the opportunity to let people know how can they get connected with you. I know you mentioned LinkedIn is a great platform that you're utilizing. But if you have like the website or an email that they can reach out to you directly at.
Yeah. So Mario Prosperino, Prosperino on LinkedIn. I'm there every day. So if you hit me on messages or a connection request, I'm pretty quick to respond. My Twitter is my first name, Mario_Prosp, Prosp. And I'm also, or actually we, ESPAT, is ESPAT Media on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, I'm pretty quick on social and I really enjoy making new connections. I don't pretend to have all the answers. Quite frankly, I'm not, you know, one of these guys that came up like Nate Shaw, you know, a gamer, then he became an owner. So my gaming kind of pedigree is not, you know, maybe, you know, two decades. But again, like, you know, I was listening to Nick's podcast a couple of days ago with you and, you know, it doesn't really matter where you come from. If you're providing value, if you're going to help the industry, right? That's what matters, right? If you have good intentions and you want to help the industry and you want to solve a problem, then you're off to a good start.
Well, thank you again for coming on the show. This has been Mario Prosperino, and thank you very much for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our Bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the Bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.